the big piece is autonomy, I think. So giving schools autonomy to teach in the way that they sort of see fit. So like my last school had their own raison d'etre, sort of reason for being document that we basically always come back to. And that was a real guide that we use across the school to make sure we're always student-centric. Now, the sort of political landscape and the bureaucrats, for the most part, want the complete opposite of that, right? So they want control, they want metrics to justify their jobs, to make it look like they're doing something. And these are people that don't really have anything to do with children in school, right? So a lot of them on huge wages, and they're basically dictating how a school should function to make their job easier. In terms of like good education, that takes the autonomy away from the school to be able to do things like creating their own raison d'etre and doing self-directed learning with the kids and making it student-centric. It becomes like a teacher-centric and then by proxy, government-centric or state-centric.
Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is the Transformation of Value podcast. In this episode, I talk with Kieran Nolan about his work combining Bitcoin, teaching, and open source technology. Kieran's official role is STEM Wizard, teaching at a primary school in Melbourne, Australia. He has been able to bring tech and learning together into the classroom, including helping kids to run Bitcoin nodes, building projects on Nosta, setting up Minecraft servers with other schools, and more. We discuss teaching and learning and how kids can be better equipped for our rapidly changing world, as well as the challenges with bureaucracy and standards-based education in government schools. Kieran is involved in a huge range of other Bitcoin and education projects, including the Mornington Peninsula Bitcoin Group, the School of Bitcoin, the Digital Playhouse Foundation, and more, so make sure to check out his details in the show notes. I will be splitting the Bitcoin boosts to this episode with Kieran, so you can give this a go with a podcasting 2.0 app such as Fountain. If you have any questions or would like to reach out, my emails are always open, hello@thetransformationofvalue.com. Otherwise, on to the show.
How you been?
I've been good, thank you.
I'm sweltering here.
Yeah, I'm missing out. All my friends back in New Zealand are enjoying the last of summer, and I'm sort of thinking, oh man, I haven't seen a summer because I skipped this one, so I haven't really seen a proper summer since early last year.
Crazy.
But how have you been? How's everything in Melbourne, Kieran?
Yeah, really good. So been pretty busy. So we've got a few initiatives underway, one of which is through school, basically setting up a network of, I won't say schools, but like-minded classrooms. So the idea being, we might have touched on it before, basically having like an open source template for my classroom. So basically for my classroom, it's a smart classroom. We've got like full nodes running in there. We've got IoT devices and a whole bunch of cool stuff. Actually just got some new VR headsets, which I'm and computers to actually build stuff on. So I'm like super keen to get that rocking. But essentially you can't do any of that sort of stuff in a traditional classroom. So in most government schools kind of across the world, and most schools in general, they use like proxy settings and things like Zscaler and things that just block everything. So if you try and do like set up a node, for example, you're just not allowed, like it just doesn't work. Or say you want to go and do a simple project, like say you're using like LNBits, you're not allowed, it's all blocked. So the solution to that is creating a secure classroom. So we've got Starlink coming into our classroom, into a mesh network, and now we've got a partnership with Fortinet, which is like basically a Cisco competitor, and teaching the kids like network fundamentals, like with their hardware and their curriculum. And basically I've done the Fortinet, gone to a course, done their curriculum, and I've tried to make it as palatable for 10-year-olds as possible. And that's been really fun. But all of that predicated on having a proper internet connection, right? So in a secure way, so we still like block nasties and stuff, It just means if there is a website we need to get access to, I can immediately unblock it, cool, we're onto that, and sort of away we go. So what we want to do is basically create a template for my classroom. So we're documenting everything on GitHub, for the physical space, for the learning space, so that another school can go, okay, cool, we can do that on the cheap too. Like, they don't have to get all the same stuff that we have. So I've got like options for different hardware if they can't afford Fortinet or just need to build like a cheap mesh network. You can still do that and still keep it secure. But basically having the setup, so or the infrastructure, so they can start doing cool projects in the classroom, sort of thing. So the last thing you want is like learning to start at 3:30 when the kids go home. Like, it's ridiculous, right? So it's been quite a journey, like last year and this year, sort of getting that off the ground. And now we've got someone actually we've got a parent and at school who's job shadowing us, because I have a team teach as well. And now we've got a volunteer from the NAB, which is the bank, which is an Australian bank, which is awesome. So he's volunteering his time to come and teach the kids coding. So we're building websites and all sorts of stuff. And he's got mad skills. So he's job shadowing me to potentially go and set up another classroom as a fork of my classroom, sort of thing. So that's kind of where my head's at the moment,
That's cool,
with that. And
man.
there's a whole bunch of projects in there that we can get into as well.
Yeah, I just got a question. So you're teaching at a public school, or is it? Yeah, and how does that work? Because I certainly think education is something that's really close to my heart. And I don't know if we talked about this last time, but I had quite a transformative experience going through intermediate school. So that what would you call junior high school? But that in New Zealand, intermediate school, and that I had a homeroom teacher who I let myself and a bunch of other kids basically skip another class and go and hang out in the computer room once a week.
Awesome,
And
awesome.
that was I'm not sure if you could even do that now. Like, I feel like there's so much pressure around the curriculum and kind of teaching to the curriculum, that even if you've got a group of young kids who are like really passionate about something, you can't really tailor it for them maybe. And that I really remember that, because that really unlocked a whole bunch of stuff. And then the lunch times were also open for using the computer room, and so we'd have like this class, and then we'd stay in over lunchtime, and we'd have like 2 hours to just work on these old these machines. And there was a few opportunities like that, and I think that made all the difference. And it sounds like sort of what you're doing is a little bit more formalized, though, because you've got a mandate to do this through your school, which sounds quite unique. Is it that
Well,
common?
we've got something called Trek Time, and I forget what the acronym means, but basically it's the like a time during the week where the kids can sort of choose where they're going.
Yeah.
So my previous school, we had that from, which was a government school as well, we had that from prep to six, where the kids did learning agreement time. So akin to what you're talking about, but throughout the whole year, sort of thing. And very cool. So like, when you give kids the ability to choose their own learning path and learning journey, the stuff you get out of it is just like next level, right? So it is still a thing. It's just few and far between schools doing it, and we're still timetabled. So there's still like, I don't feel like we get enough time. There's never enough time to do the projects that we want. But with this Trek, we get basically once a fortnight, 2 hour block. So the kids can, we're kind of focusing half of it on cybersecurity and networking, and the rest of it on their projects they want to do. So they've got like all project ideas. Like, we've got two students actually working together, and they have been working on it since last year, building a chat application on Nosta, which is sick. Like, so like they're basically through problem-based learning. So the idea is like, what social problem do you want to solve? And to them, the big piece has been communication with students that leave the school. So it's like, oh, like, well, they've all moved on to high school, and we kind of lose touch. How do we keep that going? And then, yeah, they were talking about a chat application, and I forget who I was talking to, but it might have been, I think it was, shout out to Zach. I think it was Zach from one of the Bitcoin groups here. I was like, yeah, you should do that on Nostar. So we're sort of looking at how you can do that and do it with relays, and basically have the relays between, say, schools initially that basically auth the communication between the two and have a nice interface the kids are sort of developing for that. So yeah, super fun. And like when you can give them the freedom to do stuff that they are passionate about, you get some really good results.
Well, that again, come back to that experience at intermediate. So I guess, is it like maybe 12, 13 years old? I can't quite remember what
So
intermediate.
you'd be year 7 or 8.
So, we're sort of young, but having that opportunity to go, go and use the computers, which at that time we didn't. I think we might have like one computer in the homeroom, but most of them were in the computer lab. Having that opportunity, I also remember, I don't quite know what it was, but maybe the lease on some of the machines ran out, and so they basically were depreciated or something, and they were just sitting there. And they were like, "Man, you kids can just take them if you want." I don't know if that was off the books or whatever it was, but I remember
That's
getting a
awesome.
bunch of these old Pentium threes and taking them back and networking with them. And it was like that exploration was so fundamental to what I went on to do later. And I'm just curious, you mentioned this TRIC program. Is that something that's Victoria State, or is that kind of Australia wide, or
Just our school. So
your
that's
school?
specific to our school. So, and that's the thing. Like, oh, sorry, before we go into that. So, like, talking about intermediate schools and New Zealand in particular, like, they've forever been kicking goals with that. And I think intermediate schools are the best, right? Because, like, you have basically 2 years. So, like, what happens traditionally is you have primary school and then high school. And, you know, all the cool stuff sort of happens at primary school. You can do like amazing projects, have fun. Then high school hits and it's seriousness. We're working towards the, you know, whatever standardized test it is, VCE in Victoria. And it's kind of gross, right? Like you just lose all that cool stuff that you could do. Whereas intermediate schools, they don't have that pressure. And I think they're really important. But they're few and far between in Australia, but I think that's a big thing in New Zealand. And actually my favorite intermediate school, Newlands Intermediate. In Wellington, which I've like visited a few times, and we actually set up a 24/7 link. So like what we're doing now over a video conference, but my classroom, the Enigma portal connected to their classroom. So we could literally kids could go up, wave to someone in New Zealand through the magic mirror and go in world in Minecraft and build projects together. So it was really, really amazing to see. So like every morning I'd wave to the principal, Simon, and we'd have a chat and then do our thing for the day. And it was just really, really cool. But they've been kicking goals for a long time, I think, in New Zealand in terms of education. And I think that comes from sort of the Maori influence of like peer-to-peer learning. But I think like I've just come back from there recently. I think the government sort of changing a little bit there and going a bit more draconian, and yeah, kind of like they've introduced progression points, which is like a thing they do heaps in Victoria, which is like basically we're going to rank the children against each other and then have metrics and just like grossness, right? And I think they've started doing that in New Zealand, so it's kind of like, oh man, this is like what I held up is like a higher standard as being like eroded by the grossness of what's happening in
Well,
other countries like Australia.
kind of nationalizing it a bit more. And I mean another anecdote from the school that I was at, again, it's just 2 years, but it's at a point where you've got a bunch of kids who are at the same age, because you come into high school and you've got basically, children and then adults in the same space, because you've got an 18-year-old kid who's about to leave, huge rugby player, and then the 13-year-old kid who's just come in and he's fresh, and it's a very different landscape, and it's actually a bit more jungle-like. It's sort of dog eat dog, depending on where you fit in that ecosystem. But in intermediate, you get that 2 years where the kids are ready to learn, they're excited. And at the school I was at, they also had a TV station, so each room had like a TV, and it was quite progressive. I'm quite thankful looking back that we had that opportunity. And each kind of group, each class would take a role running the TV station for a week, and it would be like the daily,
That's
broadcast.
cool.
And they had the cameras, they had the Mac Lab where you could edit films and just play around in it. There was none of that pressure around university entrance. There was none of the pressure around compliance, around some of the certification and getting credits, and what's your job going to be, and that when you become a worker bee. And it feels like it's a lot more sort of, to use the Bitcoin language, sort of the Citadel focus kind of. You've got, kids really self-directed, kind of making up what they want to do. A lot more creative, a lot more value driven, I feel. And it's not just chasing the kind of the credentials to get into a university, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. Which is, I mean, realistically, like those days are kind of over, right? Like, I mean,
Oh,
getting
no.
into debt for with some of these universities, and I think that was really crystallized like through the lockdown periods, and having I think these, particularly in Australia, these big institutions that have had unlimited money for a long time suddenly realized, oh, hang on, we haven't got the overseas money anymore. What are we going to do? And it had a knock-on effect for TAFEs and all sorts of things, like
Is
so
that
sort of lower interest technical
technical
scores.
cost? Yeah.
Because they lowered like enter scores, and yeah, it's had a really strange effect. But I think realistically, by the time for most stuff, so I'll say obviously medicine and there's a few subjects that you probably want to go to university for, but for the most part, like our fields, like in terms of technology, it's moving so quickly. Like by the time you get certified in something, it's all changed, right? So
Well,
it's kind of irrelevant.
and I mean, even for myself now, honestly, the only reason I went to university was to get a bachelor's degree so I could leave New Zealand, because most places require at least a bachelor's degree of some kind. I all of my work, everything I do, is unrelated to what I studied. I thought, well, what's the most interesting thing I could possibly study, which was Japanese literature. So that was like, and I mean, obviously, I'm living in Japan, and I love literature, but it's unrelated to any of the creative work I do, any of that stuff, because you're right, it's so slow to move. And the other thing, I think, coming back to that difference between, intermediate and university, is the political side and the politicization of what's going on. Because when you come into university, necessarily you're exposed to some of these political thoughts and the kind of the systematic way of talking about things. And that doesn't come through when you're an intermediate. You don't really feel it. I think maybe high school kids get a little bit of that,
They
but
do,
it's still, you're still a child. You don't think it as a political entity. And it's
That's
a lot more
right.
pure in that sense, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I think we need a massive paradigm shift. And people have been saying that for a long time, but I think it's kind of time now. Like, I think like Elon Musk's school that he's set up. What's it called? Name's gone out of my head.
He set up a school. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's an online school, and one of the parents was actually bringing it. It's been around for a little while. It's gonna drive me nuts.
Astronova?
No.
Astronova at SpaceX. Experimental on
No. Oh,
life.
that's must be another one. No.
Okay.
Synthesis.
Synthesis. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it's a essentially what we're talking about. It's like self-directed learning, but doing it in a really different way. I haven't done a deep dive, but I know a few friends of mine that have put their kids through it, and yeah, like next level, right? So yeah, I can see things like that sort of springing up and making a real difference. But I will say, having a face-to-face like learning space, like, and my one of my big passions is like learning space design, and creating these spaces that are conducive to good learning, like open learning spaces. It's different than online, right? So Zoom's great and you can do some cool things across the internet, but when you're in a space all together working on a project, whatever it is, you get a lot more out of that. So I think that's always going to be a thing. Physical spaces, I just think it needs to change. One of the models I really like is and we used to run one at my last school, Coder Dojo. So basically, it's an initiative that's basically set up with volunteers all across the world. So you register a space, volunteers, kids, everyone sort of comes together. They learn about whatever programming language they want to do. We kind of expanded it to all sorts of technology and computer networking as well. But that sort of model, like something like that, is probably the way forward, I reckon.
Well, the interesting thing, Kieran, is that some of these ideas are not new ideas. I mean, you'd be familiar with the Steiner School model. And then I'm just trying to think, there's another model. There's the Steiner School, and then there's another one that's quite popular, Montessori.
Montessori,
Montessori. And these are over 100 years old, right? These
yeah,
models. And I'm
they
not.
that can be a bit anti-tech. That's the only piece sort of missing there.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, we can innovate on that. So they're focused on sort of that playful learning, different, not sort of the locking kids into the room sort of thing. But if you bring in a tech component to that, that could be really powerful. And I'm not an expert in any of this at all, but I was just seeing that as a model that's already out there. And then also the emerging interest in homeschooling, because necessarily there is a agenda, and we talk about intermediate age kids, 11, 12, 13, 14, they're not political entities. They don't have the apparatus to filter, and arguably university students don't either, but they don't have the ability to filter narrative. And so to expose them to that is kind of like almost an abusive thing, right? And you see that coming through with state schools, government schools, where there is an agenda, there is a curriculum that's centralized. And so I don't know, what are your thoughts on that more broadly?
I mean, anything sort of centralized is sort of bound to fail over time, right? Like, hence the picture behind me.
Yeah. A
But
Bitcoin B is what is behind it, basically.
yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think like in terms of the big piece is autonomy, I think. So like giving schools autonomy to teach in the way that they sort of see fit. So like my last school had their own raison d'etre, sort of reason for being document that we basically always come back to. And that was a real guide that we use across the school to make sure we're always student-centric. Now, the sort of political landscape and the bureaucrats, for the most part, want the complete opposite of that, right? So they want control, they want metrics to justify their jobs, to make it look like they're doing something. And these are people that don't really have anything to do with children in school, right? So a lot of them on huge wages, and they're basically dictating how a school should function to make their job easier and to make it look like they're doing their jobs sort of thing, which is like fair enough. But in terms of like good education, that takes the autonomy away from the school to be able to do things like creating their own raison d'etre and doing self-directed learning with the kids and making it student-centric. It becomes like a teacher-centric and then by proxy, government-centric or state-centric classroom. Yet. And like you said, it's centralized curriculum. It doesn't really work, right? Like, and it's slow moving. So like, all the stuff that we're doing in my classroom doesn't really fit into the Digitech curriculum, doesn't like, all the IoT stuff, building your own nodes, building decentralized networks, learning about mesh networks. We've actually got some LoRa hardware we want to start playing around with as well. All that sort of stuff you can't do. Like it doesn't fit anywhere in the legacy curriculum. So yeah, well, the centralized curriculum, as you put it. So I think, yeah, that model needs to change and it needs to change soon. And I think there's a lot of parents who feel the same way, which is really cool. There's been a big sort of shift, particularly in Australia, of parents are going to see, well, hang on, we've got like AI, all these like, I think AI is fantastic, but like all these tools sort of coming out now that are changing the way we live. Why are we still chanting times tables and analyzing an analog clock for some reason?
Well,
It doesn't make any sense, right?
the argument, I mean, that's been put out there before, is that it is just a process machine for creating, workers, and it's a relic of the democratic 20th century, right? And the need for standardization of soldiers and all sorts of things like that. And it's most abundantly clear when you're traveling in other parts of the world. So here in Japan, the regimentation is phenomenal, and it's the same in China and different places where I've been. And you get private schools which are a little bit more advanced sometimes, but certainly high school, and the dread of the entrance exam for university, which is there, it's an existential threat for children, and they have nightmares about it, and it's traumatic because you either
It
make it or
is.
you don't. And it doesn't take into account individual, the difference between boys and girls, the difference of maybe a kid who's a quick developer or a slow developer. It's not tailored for an individual. It's for just a system. And it's sort of, it just puts you through the grinder. And that, you know, is replicated in the means of manufacturing, where you've got people who are just these salarymen, these kind of, worker bees, basically. You know, the derogatory way of looking at it would be that. And it's unequipped for the kind of creative lateral thinking that's going to be required in a changing world. And I mean, look, arguably, there's issues with other aspects of New Zealand's education system, you know, just the quality and the output, because there's no standardization. You know, you get some people who can't actually do mathematics or speak English very well. But it's still, I don't know, I think there is a way where you can bring aspects of both of those and really, decentralize it and tailor it for people. You know, it's sort of
absolutely. Well, I think having real world application as well is massive. So, like at the moment, so we're doing a halving party, at Two Love Sisters. So shout out to them. It's basically a coffee/drive-through coffee/restaurant, and awesome food. In fact, I was just there earlier this morning, and they've got two POS systems, so I literally do drive through and pay with sats for my morning coffee, which is really cool. Two POS systems, one side inside, one side and outside sort of thing. But they don't have a website, so I've been getting all the kids, so year 4 to year 6, so team teaching with Antonia. She's been awesome getting them all like excited about building this website. And because it's like local and they can all sort of visit the space, they're all excited about it. So we actually kind of split it into a few different camps. So some sort of looking at creating logos, like a new logo for them. One of the stipulations for the website is it has to have Bitcoin preferred on there.
Yeah.
And that's brought out some awesome conversations with the kids, and none negative. So like if we were sort of doing this years ago, you would have had some negative pushback, like my dad says he hates Bitcoin because it's for criminals or something like that. Didn't get any of that whatsoever. Just really positive, really exciting like conversation. So it's like, what is money? Like how come people in other countries can't have bank accounts? Like all that sort of stuff. It's been awesome. So using this like real world place that we're developing a website for is sort of expanded into all this other stuff. So kids developing in Bootstrap, some kids developing straight HTML, and then some using Wix and that sort of thing. And we're kind of bringing all that together, redoing their menu as well. So like basically they haven't got an online menu. So like, all right, it's kind of like Instagram and Facebook and everything. So bringing that all into a cohesive website for them as a project. And even the kids that are like usually a bit naughty, like engaged and building, like so cool to see. And this is like week 2 of doing that, and they're all like kicking goals. So when you have that real world application for stuff, I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, well, you get them on board. I would have been one of those naughty kids, by the way. but just one other thing that just comes to mind, Kieran, is, again, zooming out, we've got some real challenges in the world, right? We've got kind of the different blocks, I guess you could say, emerging globally, geopolitically. And even compared to when I was in school, I think now with, video streaming and things like Nostra, you know, the different kinds of ways you can connect with people. I love your idea of an open source Bitcoin classroom, because, you know, what would it mean to connect with a school in El Salvador or a school in China, you know, or somewhere that, or, you know, a place that maybe has a negative perception in the media and in the public sphere, but actually you realize that these kids are just the same. You know, you can do that cultural exchange. I mean, we used to have a sister city in Japan, and we had one in China as well. And I think I remember sending letters. We put the letters in the crates of apples that got sent over. That was sort of one of the little programs we did. I grew up in a real apple growing town, and that was like our international communication. But actually, you know, sharing a project across the world with different places, different cultures, not just your own, I feel like this could be some real positives there for the world, you know.
And sort of to go back on that point, the sort of reasoning behind my thinking with open sourcing the classroom specifically, so not the entire school, is when you have a school. So I've got an awesome principal. Shout out to Mandy. A lot of shout outs in this one. hopefully she listens to this. She's really cool, right? So she's really good at sort of working with the department and getting the metrics they want and giving enough sort of autonomy and sort of playtime for the students to do stuff they're sort of passionate about. And it's quite a hard job. Like, I wouldn't want to be a principal, I don't think, particularly in a government school. It's really, really tough. But that being said, it's a single point of failure, right? So historically, so like going back in time, like the first school I worked at, we actually went totally paperless. So this is back in, God, when Dropbox launched, so 2008, 2009, something like that. So we went, had a really cool principal. She was awesome. And she was like, yeah, we're doing it. Let's go. We're pretty affluent, so we were able to go one-to-one devices with the kids, which was like unheard of at the time. Got laptops, doing these like super classes. It was amazing. Got what was it? Xeris, I think, was the Wi-Fi. So it was like they looked like UFOs in the roof. Like it was awesome. Totally paperless, and teachers loving it, kids loving it, the whole thing, right? But in Victoria, the diocese is actually in control of Catholic schools, not the so the priest is sort of above the principal. He didn't like all the changes, and so he got rid of them and got rid of her, and it was really like, oh
So it was a Catholic
man,
school.
Catholic school, yeah. So it's like, oh, that's not cool. Yeah, it was really devastating. So like myself and the e-learning coordinator sort of left. We went to a school in Port Macquarie in New South Wales, a K-12 private school, and basically set up the first school in the cloud there, which is like the first school in Australia to get Chromebooks and doing some awesome stuff there. But what with that sort of transition, we were getting like emails from the kids saying like, what happened to our school? This really sucks. Like it was really heartbreaking to put all that work in and then just have it sort of taken away. But that's that single point of failure, right? With my previous school in Dandenong, Warana Park, we built the learning space out of shipping containers. It was awesome. Again, when the department sort of got rid of the principal, single point of failure, all that stuff just sort of crumbles away, and all the raison d'être I was talking about, like it's all sort of becomes history, right? Like it's the because the structure's not there to keep it going. So having said that, with my classroom now, what I want to do is create it in a way and create a network of interconnected classrooms. So not schools, but classrooms specifically, so that if and when a core principal leaves, that continuation of the network sort of lives on through hopefully forking my classroom to different schools. So that's sort of my thinking behind it.
I guess zooming out a bit as well, looking at sort of the teaching industry as well, we have a huge issue in New Zealand around, teachers' pay and all sorts of things like that. And it comes back to this kind of, it becomes a political hot potato because there's arguments that, look, the students aren't meeting the standards. And so the teachers shouldn't, get paid as much if the KPIs are not there, which is kind of a bit of a vicious cycle. But what are your thoughts around sort of the teacher training? The kind of the pipeline for people becoming teachers, who those people are, and sort of, because not certainly not everyone's as passionate and doing as amazing innovative stuff as you. What do you do when you've got people coming in, teaching the book, teaching the curriculum? There's sort of some challenges around sort of, what they're passionate about, what sort of outcomes they're trying to bring about. I mean, do you see sort of some structural challenges there with sort of teacher training?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's very hard. So, like to put you in the picture, basically my week's split. So half the week in primary school, actually as ES staff, so not as a teacher. That's why I'm team teaching. That's why I want to skill someone up to be in a similar role as myself to put them in another school. Second half of my week, I'm teaching higher ed. So it's a real different sort of kettle of fish there. Obviously, the pay is a lot better. But in terms of job satisfaction, I think like, yeah, like what we can sort of do with the students and build in the classrooms, like really awesome. So one sort of funding the other, if that makes sense. But I think in terms of like the training and the everything you have to go through at university. So I actually got into do a master's of teaching this year, and I've just got like a million projects on and zero time. So I kind of looked at it and I'm like, nah, I'll have to defer this for a year, I think. But one of the parents who actually volunteers in the classroom, he's doing his master's this year, and there's a lot to it. But I think he's actually said to me the other day, like going through all the curriculum and the compliance that you need to do. He was actually looking at synthesis, the Elon Musk school, when he kind of had that aha moment of, yeah, right, are we going down in sort of the wrong, not the wrong path, but like this is another avenue that he hadn't really considered before going pursuing doing his master's of teaching. So there's definitely something there, and I dare say the other piece is it's not cheap either, right? So like you have, because you sort of alluded to like how much teachers get paid, it's not enough or up to actually get your degree. It's quite expensive to go through university, and you're paying it back for a long time. And I think they're like changing all the rules around like how much you have to pay back and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I think it's quite, it needs to change. I think we need like a new standard. I don't know how we get to that point, but I think something like the model around Coda Dojo, but having some sort of certification around that potentially might be the way forward. And that sort of speaks to the homeschoolers as well that you mentioned before. So we used to have a whole bunch of homeschoolers coming. They came as far as I don't know if you know the geography of Melbourne at all, but from Bendigo to Dandenong, they would travel on a weekend when I used to run on the weekends to come. And I think the learning they got out of the days that I spent with them was fantastic. So if you could somehow monetize that, I guess, and give people the opportunity to sort of do something like that. And I think even the Trek model that we're doing at school, apologies for forgetting what the actual acronym stands for. But that as an entire school could be like a really cool way forward. Actually, Peter Hutton, who was really good TED Talk, if you haven't seen it, his TED Talk, is the ex-principal from Templestowe College. I'm going to catch up with him next week, I think. But he had a project in the works in the middle of the bear market, which is probably the worst time. He wasn't looking for Bitcoin, but I was just thinking, geez, it would have been awesome if it was in a bull run to fund it. But basically a free for student model for I think it was years 6 to 12. Part of the city had a building set up and everything ready to go. Open 365 days a year. Students negotiating their timetable with their facilitators, so with their teachers slash facilitators, and having the government pay for a portion of it. So that's how the Catholic Ed do it. But basically the concept being getting all the compliance curriculum stuff out of the way early in the year, rest of the year, your project, and basically starting a business within the school, and whatever you make on that business feeds back into funding the school. Super cool model. He needed like a mill to get it off the ground. And yeah, like I said, bear market, I was like, shit, if this had been like now-ish, it would have been awesome. So I think something like that. And I know there's a lot of people thinking along the same line. So we'll get there. And I think it's not going to be through compliance that we get there, that's for sure.
Well, a couple of threads there, Kieran. So, I remember again, sort of primary, intermediate, and as you know, I'm really into art and creative stuff. And You know, I remember situations, you know, I'd be like sketching or doing something and it'd be off topic. You know, as I said, I was the naughty kid. And that sort of stuff comes back to me. And I mean, it was a long time ago, but I think, man, that was actually the stuff that mattered, you know, because you're developing skills, you know, the outdoor play, all of that sort of stuff. And as mentioned, that example, in intermediate, which was sort of the exception out of my education, where I had really, you know, really great homeroom teacher who, you know, let us do this and kind of used his seniority to kind of make it happen, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that was quite cool. But I think coming back to the idea of like how does that fit into a changing world? Because I think that's sort of what I'm concerned about. You know, I don't have much to do with that world, to be honest. You know, I haven't got kids yet, and I'm sort of looking at it from afar. But I think, man, this what does the future look like for these institutions? Because they're sort of beholden to a lot of the front end politics of the government of the day, and you're almost, yeah, you're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't, and so it just leads to mediocre outcomes. And that's where we've got homeschooling now emerging as an alternative that people are looking at, which historically was more, I think, around like a Christian kind of, you know, family-oriented learning, Christian learning. But there's actually a lot of people who are just doing it because they don't want to have the government involved. Have you seen an uptick of that around you at all, or?
No, actually. One thing that has been like since the lockdown period was actually students refusing to go to school. So that's a big thing now. We're pretty good again, because Mandy's really good at sort of maneuvering with that and giving kids a bit of freedom when they come to work on what they want. But school refusing is basically like kids saying, "I'm not going, and you can't make me," sort of thing. And it's like logically it makes sense, right? Like, well, you made me sit at home for 2 years in front of a computer. Why am I going to this building now? It doesn't make any sense. And it, like, they're right. Like, it doesn't make
Well,
any sense
yeah, they're
whatsoever.
self-sovereign humans. They may be, you know, young, but you can't force them to do something. You know, it's just abusive. So it's sort of the role of the adults to actually make the case. And it was the adults who locked them in the house to start with, or the government, you know, arguably adults. But that challenge, you know, and you see that here in Asia as well, you know, sort of the kids withdrawing, sort of not wanting to leave their room, the social pressure, all of that stuff. And that's where coming back to open source and homeschooling for me, you know, I'm interested. Just sort of longer term, you know, what does that look like? Sort of a global, you know, a world-class level curriculum or education system, an open source platform, and then actually being able to do it in the community. So not just, you know, maybe not at home per se, but with a group of people.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. So I think you're like work learning from home and not going and learning with, like, there's a big thing about having a learning space and going there and doing cool shit with other people, right? Like, if you haven't got that space to do it, which is why I think we had so many homeschoolers coming to the Coda Dojo when we were running it, because it's just like, oh, cool. Now we have a community. Now we can, like, like-minded people. We had a big group from the Linux Foundation used to come. It's like there's a big Linux Foundation in Melbourne. They used to come along to with their kids to Coda Dojo. We had a group from actually a bunch from the Bitcoin Center at the time as well, which is as you'd imagine, because I was a volunteer there as well. So I was sort of spruiking it, but I think, yeah, a lot of those people that are homeschooling kind of miss that community aspect. So yeah, I think if we could build that out and go, cool, we've got this awesome learning space, come and work on your projects and do it as a team rather than in isolation, all for it. I think it's awesome.
Well, I wonder if there's almost a rebrand in there because, yeah, as I said, the homeschool, I guess, brand image in New Zealand, and it is legal. There is, you know, framework for doing that, and it's possible. I'm not sure. Some other countries they're actually quite strict about it. You know, and I think Germany, for example, you know, it's not even an option. But New Zealand, I assume Australia, as you mentioned, there's a few people doing that. But the idea of homeschooling from home, you know, the parent to the child, you know, that's I mean, that's one aspect of it, but actually, you know, something like community schooling or open schooling, you know, there must be a word in there where there's a place that you go to and that place of higher learning or learning in general. And you can have someone come in, and that could be one of the parents or someone who's maybe gone through some training, but they've actually got specialist skills in whatever, whether it's creative computers, social studies, you know, one of the different areas, and they can come in and give specialist advice. Because the thing, people underestimate kids, but if you get in a specialist, you know, someone who's doing horticulture, someone who's doing engineering, man, the kids will follow along. You know, you take them all the way, and you say, all right, we're gonna build a bridge, you know, and you do a small mock-up, and you learn about how the structure supports the weight, and you know, you can boil it down, but it requires someone who's got that specialist knowledge to be able to then boil it down to start with. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, and the other big piece, like going back in time, like with the Coto Dojo piece, like with the I was really shocked with the private school kids coming along. So we had a few Tiger mums with their kids, and like one of them sort of got up in my grill, was like, "I want you to teach my son this and this." I was like, "Whoa, this is meant to be fun and free." Like, hang on. But what I was really shocked with, and I took it for granted, so like the work that the school had done with the kids to instill like confidence and sort of passion for learning and self-directed learning and like what projects they want to do. So like for example, they used to play, was it Kerbal Space Program, which is like you would play, it's awesome, mad fun. So you can get like your rockets into space, etc. But there was actually one of the kids found was like a hack for it. So you could play multiplayer. So you could actually set up a server and get connected with your friends and then spend hours like trying to dock in space. And it's just like the math and everything behind that is just like insane, right? But I would say that they had to set up their own network if they wanted to play it first as well, right? So literally they'd be getting out all the cables. You have to set up your DHCP server, set this up to get connected to the internet, rah-rah. So they'd do that. And then like basically I'd be just facilitating. They'd come in, do that, and a whole bunch of other projects as well. The private school kids, I was like, all right, guys, what do you want to do? They were literally sitting there, sitting on their hands. They couldn't even come up with something that they wanted to do, like for the day. I was just like, you can do anything you want, anything
Free time.
that you can build whatever you want. We've got computers here. We've got an amazing, like we had VR, everything. Like, do you want to build a VR game? They couldn't give me a thing. So they're used to didactic teacher at the front of the room yelling at them, telling them to turn to the next page. And they were kind of stuck in that. And I was just like, it kind of hit me. I was like, holy shit, this is like most schools. Like most schools are like that with, you know, someone standing at the front of the room telling them what to do like all day long. And that's got to change 100%.
Well, and it is changing, man, because that model, again, that's mapping straight onto society. And we saw that during COVID, where everyone got up and they went and did what the guy on the TV told them, or the woman in our case in New Zealand, and they for the worst
A
possible
beautiful
outcomes.
woman. No.
I mean, they were compelled, let me put it that way, to do the best, you know, what the government told them to do, and that was unacceptable. And it took, you know, there was certainly a number of people out there who were critical of that, but for the vast majority of people who, you know, authority is hard to stand up to. It's sort of, you know, you come back to questions around debate culture as well, and sort of learning to innovate on how you have a discourse, you know, and how you, how you communicate an idea, critical thinking, these kinds of ideas, which I think are still for kids. Maybe is depending on the age, it hasn't developed yet, but certainly getting into high school, that's a debate club and that kind of thing is really important.
For
Softness,
sure.
you know, being able to talk through an idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Long form in particular, like I think having the irritating thing with like TikTok and that sort of culture, I think, is like you don't get this sort of back and forth. Like we're obviously like listening to podcasts all the time, right? So we're used to really thinking about ideas. Like you go for a walk, put your headphones in, you're like, oh, this is great. Learning is good. Bloody TikTok is like it's insane. It's like one insane thing to the next, and it's just like, oh.
I've got a question for you. In your experience, how have you seen the role of smartphones and social media affecting kids in schools?
That's a great question. I was actually on TV talking about this
Oh, really?
with my last school. Yeah, so
Yeah.
there's a clip on my website. You can check it out. Screens in schools. So it was actually pretty cool. So it was like a current affair, which usually can be a bit iffy. Like I could have been the bad guy, but they made
Yeah.
it was really cool.
Yeah.
They basically had like one school locking them up and putting them in, phone cages and phones
Faraday
are off.
cage.
So, not allowed at this school, no learning allowed. But like so there was a ban came through, right, across Victoria, and we ignored it because rightfully so, right? Because it's a learning tool. So the perception is like a phone, some other device that you isn't like a computer. You have to be sitting in front of a computer to be learning. It's like, well, some people can't f afford the latest computer, but they probably can afford a cheap Android phone to learn with. So you banning it is really elitist. So it's like, yeah, cool. Kids at the private school who can afford the latest MacBook, they're allowed to learn. But a kid in a school that maybe their parents can't afford the latest MacBook or even a computer, they're not allowed to learn. So because you have this like preconception of what a device, a learning tool is. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is we're using them all the time. So using them outside, augmented reality, virtual reality, all the cool things you can do with documentation and just video making, right? Like filmmaking with a phone is fantastic. So long answer to your question, I think phones are fantastic. Shouldn't be banning them, and it's a learning device. It's just you got to learn how to use it like anything else.
So I guess that's the phone side, the hardware side, but I guess the challenge then is really the software and the social media, I think, in particular for kids. Like, I mean, drill it more specifically on that point. How do you see that in terms of, I mean, what even is the role of the school? Is this an issue squarely with the parents or what? But like,
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it comes down to education again, right? So I'm actually off all socials, actually before the NOSTA conference that we met at
oh, you told me about
in
the story.
Japan. So I just killed it. So I was just like boom, 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 boom. All my social was gone except for NOSTA, and I actually got to tell Jack Dorsey that, and he gave me a high five, which was awesome. But yeah, I think sort of leading by example and doing that in a school space as well. So we actually had this discussion the other day, and because we had a guy from Optus actually coming out to do cyber sec, but basically, like the irony is out of control, right? Like the massive honeypot, like one of the biggest hacks in the world, and they're sending someone out to teach about cybersecurity. But one of the conversations that sort of came up was social media and how that works. And it was actually cool because we got to tell the kids like about how the role of the corporation, so like whether it's Instagram or Meta, whatever they're calling themselves now, Facebook, Google, once or YouTube, like whatever it is, once you upload on there, it's got written in the clause, in particular Facebook, Twitter's another one, that picture that or that video that you just uploaded actually belongs to them. It doesn't belong to you anymore. And that I think that was an aha moment for a lot of kids who would have never have thought of that before. And I can see NOSTA as being a solution for that. So
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, man, as you were talking, I was thinking, man, if I think back, really, the idea of like the community classroom, because for a kid, the world is a lot smaller, like it's kind of who's around them, and a Nostra group, a sort of a semi-private group that's in a decentralized piece of tech, that's actually got a huge amount of learning potential, and it's connectivity because it's in real life. It's these, you know, the kids around you. The challenge is, as you say, that you're getting your data exposed. These mega corps holding on to it, and that's, I guess, maybe in a way, and they're gaming the algorithm as well, and so they're using it against you to attack your self-esteem and to make you feel inferior, to sell you products, whatever. And all of those problems go away with a decentralized protocol, right?
Exactly. Well, it's like you use the protocol, right? Those other applications use you. That's the big difference. And it's insidious when you really think about it. Like,
It's gross, you
it's
know?
gross. It really is. Like, how they keep sort of getting away with it as well. And then you had that, like, I don't know if you saw that Zuckerberg thing just recently, and he's like apologizing to people. It was like, really?
He's having a
I
moral
don't.
moment to
Yeah,
sort of
like, no,
finally.
he's not.
Right. Well, Kieran, I was having a chat with a guy, Andrew Wilson, who runs the Disentanglement podcast, and he's really interested in how big tech is sort of spying on people. I mean, you know, everything we know, right? And then I was having a chat with him about it, and he said, when it comes to kids, though, it's not even that it's not a fair fight. It is outright abusive and violent because the way social media is weaponized against young people, which I was thankful, I was kind of there. It was there when I was going through school, and you had sort of MSN, I think it was, you know,
Oh,
and
Messenger.
Messenger. But even then, it was point to point. It wasn't publicly broadcast, and none of that stuff exists anymore, I'm pretty sure. Like, that was slightly before
That's right.
the epoch where Facebook was coming in and vacuuming everything up. So, you know, it has been lost to time. Whereas the stuff, you know, if you've got a kid coming in 11 years old, it's on Facebook, it's on there all the way through their life.
That's right.
And there's something very, you know, and is that being used to train some AI model to sell them something better? You know, who knows? That's it's almost, I think we'll look back on it and think, man, how did we let this happen? And we're seeing that emerge now, obviously with Nostra and other things. But I mean, I'm interested. You know, what does education tech on Nostra look like? That sounds like a whole
Well,
mark.
what, man, the coolest part with that is being able to teach asymmetric encryption. Like without the monetary aspect attached to it, right? So like teaching Bitcoin or any blockchain or any sort of Bitcoin based thing requires some money behind it, right? And that sometimes leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. So that it's just like association of money and education, and most people are financially illiterate, so it doesn't sort of gel well. But now we can literally teach like asymmetric encryption with a purpose. So public key, private key, how do you keep this safe? There's no money in there, although on Nostra you can get zaps and that sort of thing. But just at the base level, how do you keep this thing secure? And it's like password security, but to the next level sort of thing.
Well, it's also a lot easier sell because, you know, you're talking to a parent and you say, hey, you know, as I'm pretty sure every parent's probably thinking, man, I hope my son or daughter isn't gonna get on Instagram, get on Facebook, get on Snapchat, and start getting exposed to this stuff. I think that's a pretty easy sell. And you say, well, look, we're gonna teach them security, cybersecurity. We're gonna teach them how to manage and how it actually works under the hood, and they're actually in control of it. They're running it's a decentralized protocol. They're running it. They can be part of it, and they can choose what they reveal. That's like, man, there's something really powerful about
Run
that.
your own relays, run your own node, like everything, right? It's And it, when you dive into it, it's pretty damn exciting. Like what, like the potential that we can. It's just scratching the surface. And like every week, there's like new developments on Nostra. It's just like exponential. I think, I reckon. I don't know what you think, but that Tokyo conference, I think that was the best conference I think I've ever been to. Like, and I've been to a lot, right? A lot of education ones specifically, but you always get like the suits like selling their wares at other conferences, you know, like so like whether it's Edutech or like whatever it is, there was none of that. It was all everyone working on this open source protocol with a common goal, and the conversations were just like next level. Like any person you turn to was just like had something to share. Like I actually did a stream back to the classroom, which was really cool for the kids. And we did a Nostra art competition. So you know how there was like the art competition at the event where to fill everyone in. Basically, students in Japan drew the nostrich in all different styles, and then basically had the QR code where we could zap the actual art piece, and that would go to their wallet sort of thing. It was very cool. Actually, I had someone from Australia zap one of the art pieces like through the magic of the internet. But very cool. So then came back, did a similar sort of thing in Minecraft, and we did pixel art of nostriches. So I've got this whole world of just nostriches like all across the world. It's very, very cool. And yeah, the kids love, they actually love the mascot. So like the idea of a purple ostrich was on point. But anyway,
Yeah.
I've derailed the conversation.
No.
What were we saying?
Oh no. Well, I mean, I agree. Actually, it was effectively my first large-scale Bitcoin-related conference, so I guess I was blessed to have that experience. Because I agree with you absolutely. There was a lot of really good conversations, a really good vibe, a lot of nice breakout groups and things that formed, and certainly Nostra has come up again in a couple of recent conversations I've had on this show, and I'm sort of looking at it and. What we're talking about here, it's actually a very different space because, kind of the Bitcoin world, it may use Nostra, but what we're talking about here, just with general education, with the kids connecting, like it's using the protocol, but it doesn't actually have to do anything with the Bitcoin community. It does, it can
That's
be,
right.
and I think that's what I'm looking forward to is when Nostra is being used by a lot of other communities as well, because ultimately it is a protocol. It isn't just for the Bitcoiners. And there is, I think, a subset in Japan of people who are using it kind of, as an alternative to Twitter, and they're not necessarily Bitcoiners.
My
But
feed is filled with Japanese characters, and I'm
yeah.
just like, and sometimes it doesn't do the translation properly, so I'm just like, oh, because
What's
I
that?
met so many cool Japanese people that added me, and I've got no idea what they're saying, but
Yeah.
it's still cool.
So, I mean, I'm looking forward. I wonder what the future looks like with, education tech. The classroom groups on, on Nostra, and just different kind of layers of community, the kind of federations, all of this stuff, and how that comes through. And then, yeah, just the bit more broadly, the use of open source tech in classrooms. Getting away from, as you say, the suits who are trying to sell something, whereas, just stuff like Linux, or C
Oh man,
Signer,
yeah.
any of this stuff, I feel like there's just some real goodness in there that can be brought through to learning.
There's one girl, I don't know, we're probably out of time, but just to finish on this note,
Oh, that's right.
one girl who last year, in the last year, year six girl, was really interested in Linux. So we did a bunch of different distros on her computer, and basically her laptop had been set up and locked down with group policies with Windows. And I was like, well, it doesn't have to be. Why don't we wipe it and we'll chuck on Linux over there?
We
And she was
nuke
like, oh,
it.
yeah. And she was so excited by that. And then trying like different distros. And anyway, for her high school, she's setting up a business to like wipe other kids' laptops and install Linux. And I was just like, that is so cool.
Oh
And
man.
yeah, she emailed the other day and said, yeah, it's going really well. So yeah, very
That's
cool.
cool, man. I mean, it's all learning. I mean, I remember there's just like one other story. I mean, when I was in high school, I got And this is actually looking back, it's a bit brutal, but I got kicked off the computer network for a year for
Whoa.
hacking,
Yeah, yeah.
quote unquote. And I was thinking, man, what does that even mean? Because I was just playing around, and I think that really set, maybe that's where my anarchist tendencies came from, but or perhaps from my father. But I mean, that was sort of where I started thinking, you know what, this is bullshit, because you should be encouraging kids to learn, and you should be letting them play with it.
Well,
And to, yeah.
what someone should have done is jump in and go, oh, cool. How did you do that? Cool, let's do it again. And then we can figure out how to stop other people from doing that. So like turn you into a white hat hacker.
Yeah,
And so that's that
I
and
became a
that's
black hat,
yeah. Don't say
man. Yeah,
that.
no. Orange hat. But
Orange hat.
that's cool, man. Well, look, I really appreciate you sharing some of the stuff you work on, man. I mean, it's exciting. Like it's quite a lot of stuff. Like, are you like how do you where are you in terms of education, where are you keep like talking about that? What's the best way to follow that journey? Like, is it Nostra, or have you got like a website
Yeah, so
somewhere?
my website's probably the best. I've got like all my projects on there. So I've got katienolan.com, the school of bitcoin.com. So we didn't even touch base on that, did we? So school of bitcoin is a V4V open project, and basically we've got anyone can come on board. We have faculty meetings every Friday, And basically, it's what we're calling a decentralized autonomous education system, where the person sort of presenting stuff, it doesn't have to be on Bitcoin. Like, we've done stuff on GitHub and all sorts of stuff on there. Person presenting gets all the sats. So we put it up on the open source Bitcoin channel and on Stack News. We've got a territory on there. Actually, no, we don't. I let it lapse. So we need to buy a new territory. But yeah, very cool. But so we've got Score Bitcoin, working on Lightning Systems. Nosterware is another project. Bernio Hackerspace, that's my classroom. So you can check that out on my website. GitHub Zero podcast, which I've been really lazy with. I need to do. Actually, do you want to come on the next? Just we
Man.
should do that. Let's do that. Peninsula Bitcoins, so that's where we're getting all the Peninsula businesses to start accepting Bitcoin in a circular economy, which is really, really cool. Digital Playhouse, a whole bunch of stuff. So yeah, kdnolan.com, you can see it all on there.
Sorry, I know. Do you have to go in a minute? Because I was just going to ask you one more question. Or
Yeah, shoot.
I was just going to say the Mornington Peninsula, so peninsulabitcoin.com. I just wanted to talk about that because that you've actually gone ahead and made that into an official thing somehow, right? Is that how's that?
Yeah, we do. So I can't announce the. So it's kind of two-factor. We're building an association, but I can't really announce that yet.
I can just forget about that, but.
No, that's cool. It's cool. But the Peninsula Bitcoin, that's basically businesses on the peninsula, and the idea is basically we've got with Lightning Systems setting them up with hardware so they can accept and then use that in a circular economy, like around the peninsula, and it's been pretty cool. So Two Lab Sisters is the main space that we're sort of operating out of, and that's where we're going to do the halving party and stuff as well. Really nice family business. So yeah, it's awesome to see how that's eventuated and sort of it's sort of grown from 2, 3 people in a meetup to now we've got like 40 or so coming to meet up. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, maybe next time, we'll maybe once you've got something to announce, we'll talk more about Mornington Peninsula and that group. But otherwise, man, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and yeah, I hope we can keep in touch.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's been good catching up.
Thank you for listening. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I am Cody Allingham, and that was the transformation of value. If you would like to get in touch, please send me an email at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com, and I will get back to you.